What's up, everyone? Welcome to Narrative Calculus, the podcast show where we analyze everything from movies to TV shows, books, musicals, and everything in between. I'm Jonathan, a filmmaker, and this is...
Terrible Ty, a wannabe writer.
Yes, and today we're reviewing quite possibly one of the worst movies, and that's saying a lot, that we've taken a look at this on this podcast. The Royal Prince. That title alone tells you basically everything you need to know about this movie. It's a Netflix film, and it's basically if you took a Hallmark film and you took any smidge of anything that was good out of it and added some insanity and complete unrealisticness,
this is
basically what you get.
Hold on. First of all, it's a Christmas Prince. Get it right, Jonathan.
Oh, my bad.
Second of all, people not acting realistically is by definition what a Hallmark film is. So be more specific. Come on, man.
No,
come on.
They took the 10 they were already at. They put it up to an 11 here.
That is true.
They took it to the next level for sure. But before we get into the plot and all that good juicy stuff, we're gonna rip into it. Ty, what did you think of this?
Yeah,
horrendous
just,
piece of art.
What a disaster. I mean. I don't think there's any other words to describe what a mess this film was. No, it's not a mess. It's the most coldly calculated. It's strange. You can see that, like, the people writing this have written films before. Like, the pacing-wise, beat to beat,
yes,
it sounds right. If you were reading the description for this, you would say, "Oh, that sounds like a normal story, more or less." Mm-hmm. Right? I'm sure they fill in the details, but it's when you get down to the execution and into the down and dirty details that it starts to immediately fall into pieces.
But the pacing was good, but the plot itself was an absolute mess.
True, I'm talking, it was, right, when you get, I'm saying from a broad strokes point of view, like,
okay.
Specifically from a narrative viewpoint, like, beat one to beat two to beat three, it makes kind of sense how it's structured. Maybe not the individual details, but.
Okay. My opinions were largely the same. The only thing I'd say differently is that this movie's not unwatchable. I here, let me pull this up. I gave Ty a colorful description of this movie. Basically, the general idea was, it's kind of like watching someone, like, all right, here, let me put it this way. It's like if someone was, like, on a, let's say just a wooden boat full of water, oil, banana peels, and grease, just absolutely everything, and they kept falling on their face over and over and over again, and you just can't turn your eyes away because you want to see what happens next. That's what it's like experiencing this movie. It's not like Kirk Cameron's what was it even called, the movie
Saving Christmas.
Yeah, it wasn't that, where it just absolutely drained you and you can't do anything else the rest of the day, you just stay in bed. No, it wasn't like that. It was like watching someone fall flat on their face over and over again. And
it's like that bad Saturday TV show America's Home Videos, right? Any of you have watched that before, images of people get dropping their crotches accidentally onto metal bars and poles and stuff. It's that similar kind of entertainment where you're going like, ooh,
yeah.
But you can't turn away. You can't turn away.
Yeah. Basically. All right, so I'm going to give you all a quick plot summary in case you haven't seen this before. And actually, I usually say, and it may stay that way, but today I'm not. Today I'm going to say, give it a try. You might have some fun. Give it a try. But, so basically what happens is this this girl, I don't even remember her name, she just...
Amber Moore. Her,
oh, I was going to say generic blonde girl, because that's basically the extent of her characterization in this movie. But, yeah, so it's basically she's a writer, and she's waiting for her big break. I put in quotation marks, ooh, original, yeah. And she gets this assignment that none of the other writers can cover about the nefarious super nightlife club nightclub life prince scandal light of the social club, you know, all this stuff. And she says she has to go to his press conference about his coronation or whatever. She does that, and on her way there, on her way to the castle, some super what would she call him? A super selfish jerk.
Yeah, with strong words. So, very creative. Yeah, too.
she called him a selfish jerk. She could because he took her cab. I wonder. Yeah, couldn't be a prince. Yeah,
it was
so,
the Terminator. That would make for a much more interesting movie. He's there to eliminate the prince. Go back in time.
So that happens. The coronation is canceled, but she tries to sneak into the castle, which is probably breaking quite a few laws in that place. And she impersonates another. Oh, and I want to make a highlight here because when she's first discovered, she's mistaken to be the princess's tutor, and she says, "Oh, you're an American," and the way she says "you're an American" is like low key racist.
I don't think that's quite the right term. Maybe nationalist.
What do you think about it? Yeah, I don't know. She's like, you're American.
Could you imagine somebody saying that about, I don't know, let's say, well, no, actually, we insult. I was going to bring up France, but then I realized in America we do the exact same thing to like 90% of European countries. So on second thought, you know. You've seen those jokes before, right? Where the guy's like, "Oh, he's a Frenchman." Like,
oh yeah. So yeah, I don't know.
Side note, can we just appreciate for a second? Remember, if it's in the pursuit of a good story, a journalist is allowed to do anything. Apparently, impersonation and fraud in a foreign country. You know, in a foreign country too. Like, holy cow, that does not seem like a good idea.
When you like add up all the different like unlawful action she's taking, it'd be quite a sentence. Let's just say that.
Look, forget.
And so she's.
Sorry, I just wanted to bring up this one thing. Forget the marriage. She should have, at the end of the movie, they should have thanked her, and then thugs come out of nowhere and say that she's going to jail and awaiting trial for her crimes against humanity or against the throne. Maybe not humanity. All right, you continue. I'm sorry.
So, yeah, basically that happens. So she's mistaken for the tutor. And she meets up with the prince, and he recognizes her for being the person who called him a selfish jerk, and hold his feelings. So basically, she doesn't really know the first thing about being a tutor, and I don't know. Basically, the whole second act is a whole bunch of just like royal shenanigans with her just trying to fit in is basically the extent of this. I basically, it's just one royal event to another with her trying not to get exposed.
That's what happens.
That's literally all that happens the whole second act.
That's what happens when you don't have an antagonist and a definite objective, which we'll get into later. There's no forward momentum for most of the story. It's just...
Yeah. Oh, wait, no, there was an antagonist? Remember the wolf?
Yes! Let's skip ahead there. Let's skip ahead. So after...
Yeah. So basically...
Yeah, you continue. Yeah.
Yeah. After all that happens, she kind of starts to get a little crush on the prince. Isn't that so cute? She's like, she thinks she's falling in love, and then she goes and she steals a horse. I've heard somewhere like horse thieving can be punishable by hanging, or it used to be like a horse thief in the Old West. You could be hung for that.
Well, on top of all of her other crimes against the throne, I think that's pretty petty. Yeah.
So, yeah, that happens. And not only does she steal the horse, she steals it to spy on the prince. Yeah. So that happens, but then she gets cornered by a wolf, and it looks like it's gonna squatch ho in her face, and then the prince, no one but the prince, he comes to her rescue.
Oh my god.
And takes her to a bar and gives her whiskey. So yeah, I don't know. Kind of sketchy there. You probably don't want to go to a random bar with a prince and him giving you whiskey. It's probably not the greatest combination in the world. And then the big plot development happens right here. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, get ready. She looks under a dresser and finds a secret compartment with the prince's birth certificate. With his birth certificate and papers of adoption that state he was adopted and therefore cannot be considered a viable a viable person to be able to take over the throne. Yeah.
And
so that happens, and so she thinks that she's got this breakthrough story, but now she has to basically decide whether she wants to pursue this relationship with the prince or further her career goals. And there's another rival to the throne, his name's Simon, and there's another random girl kind of shows up midway through, and they think she's a little weird for whatever reason. Basically, because she acts like an American. Like, literally, she doesn't do anything unnatural for an American to do in those circumstances. And they think that she's so weird that it's okay for them to snoop inside her room. So, yeah, it's a little bit far-fetched. And this is like a count. Like a count of a country. So, yeah, very out of whack there.
I can see that the standards have dropped significantly over in Aldovia. All of that inbreeding has finally started to build up, I think. They did say it's a small country.
And they find the prince's birth certificate and papers of adoption. And figure out that he's adopted, and so the count is the next in line for the throne. So basically, he and the girl exposes this to the whole world. But then there was a poem about an acorn, basically, and the reporter girl, she remembered it. And then there was like a, and then on the Christmas tree in the castle, there was like a, the king made a acorn ornament, and so she looked inside the acorn ornament, and there was the official decree of the law that stated you didn't have to be of the actual bloodline.
How does their lawmaking system work? Their king can make a law and hide it away and put it in an acorn, and apparently that's valid. He doesn't need permission from he doesn't have a legislative a parliament or something. What is this system? Yeah. Is this a dictatorship? I don't. It's so strange.
Honestly, Aldovia is like a town with a castle. ultimately, who cares? Alright, it's like, yeah, you can be the king. Yeah, sure, you won't be able to break too much there. And so, and then how it ends. So then she goes back to her home in New York City, and who's waiting for her there? Except for the prince, who proposes to her after meeting her a month ago.
And not only that, after he sold her, after she sold him out, and and took adoption papers and betrayed him, and it's just, what?
I'd like to quote Kristoff here from Frozen. What if you hate the way he eats? What if you hate the way he picks his nose? What? And eats it. All men do it. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe all women do it too. Maybe he should be concerned about that, because that's He'd really like. I bet he can't. If he turned, he could. If he turned around, he couldn't even name her eye color. Like, this is how little they interacted in the movie. They threw snowballs at each other. That's the extent of their. Yeah. Yeah. Overall,
well, he did help her almost fire an arrow at the manager girl.
Yeah, that could have killed her. That could have gone. Yeah, that would have been. Yeah, yikes. Okay. Honestly, okay. Characters. Here we go. Generic blonde girl, aka
Amber Moore.
Amber Moore.
All right. So I think this is what I really wanted to talk about in this section with Amber Moore, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, I wanted to hear your thoughts on those kind of blank, sort of almost stand-in characters, generic stand-in characters, right? That you like, their purpose is to be an audience surrogate where the audience can pretty much just push themselves in on the protagonist. I feel like that this is a good opportunity to talk a little bit about that, and I was wondering what your thoughts are on those types of characters. Because I think it's pretty clear that's what she was meant to be, right? She's supposed to be this sort of super generic, hyper bland girl so that everybody could say, wow, I'm just like her. And then, you know, dream of a prince coming to sweep them off their feet.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like this is a way it was done badly. Obviously, there's good examples too, like Luke Skywalker. He was a good... It was funny. He's kind of, he's like blonde and American too in this strange society. But I don't know. Star Wars became really successful and people really resonate with Luke Skywalker. So I think it was the execution here that really went off. And she was so generic and bland though. Like obviously there's Luke is a little generic, but not in his personality or like his character traits per se. But in basically just his role in the plot, you know? But here, all she has going for her is that she's a reporter. And that's literally all you know about her. You know,
I was literally
nothing else. So
there could have been a really good opportunity right there written in. Why does she want to become a reporter? Is there some... Why does she have such a desire to report, you know, the truth wherever she finds it? And then that would have made for a pretty... That could have made for an interesting conflict. She has some really good reason from her past for wanting to advance her career, right? Instead, no, for no reason that we know of, she just wants to advance her career. And we don't know why, we don't know what led her down that path. That could have been a conversation topic with the king. Like, they're both talking about their past. Then she says, you know, the reason why I became a reporter was because... I don't think we ever get a conversation like that.
No, we don't. Honestly, I don't even have anything else to say about her, do you?
Let me double-check my notes here.
I think, actually, the more interesting character here is the prince. I think he's... Out of everyone, he's the most developed...
Albeit by, like, a very fine margin. wait, two things. Two things before we move on to the print. First of all, the actor playing this, for you old-school 2000s kids, that the main character playing this is the Yellow Ranger in Power Rangers RPV. I do not know how that happened or what... This is a serious step down. I'm going to be honest. She was much better in Power Rangers, I think. Far more compelling.
Dude, wasn't there like 15 Power Rangers reboots? I felt like there was like... how many were there? Well, I feel like it kept starting over and over
again. To be fair, the iteration that she was in was widely considered to be the best one. So, I mean, she did have a somewhat good thing going for her. Second of all... Why did she suddenly become so nice to the prince? I mean, come on. This is romantic comedy 101. You have the main girl being all cold and standoffish to the main dude because the main dude accidentally did something and they have a misunderstanding. Like, they're so cliche and everything else, but all of a sudden she just acts nice as soon as she finds out he's a prince. That's if
no, I don't. I feel like she's kind of at that point just trying to, because he's the person that she's going to have to be, you know, basically inspecting. So I think it's just natural to, if the person you're going to be spying on, you don't want to like create any more doubt in their mind than, you know, anything that you might accidentally do does, you know, like he might accidentally find out. But you know, if she's like super antagonistic to him, then he has, you know, a higher likelihood of, you know, finding something out. I feel like if she kind of lulls him into a false sense of security, then, which is basically I think what she was trying to do, then he's not going to suspect as much, you know what I mean?
You know, that would have been, I would have liked to see that. That could have made for an interesting, if they had gone full 100% on that, where she's this deceptive little minx who's constantly, you know, tricking everybody around her, always be, like, that sounds like an interesting character. And it would have been interesting seeing her slowly realize that she doesn't want to keep on lying to the people she cares about, or something, you know, cheesy like that. That seems like that could have been cool. Look at us here. We're already coming up with better ideas, and it's been like 10 minutes. Come on. Step up your game. Netflix, come on.
Netflix. The only other thing I have to say about her is how did she not know how to curtsy? Like, all you have to do is watch Sophia the First, and you know how to curtsy. You don't know what that is, do you?
I know what curtsy is.
No, you don't know the TV show I just referenced.
No, I do not know.
Yeah, that just tells me you don't have little sisters. Yeah, okay, so, yeah, that was kind of whack. It was like, that was unrealistically dumb. It was like, okay, movie, you know, I get it. She's not from here, but you don't have to make her goofy like that. I don't know, I have nothing else to say to you.
I would like to talk a little bit more about her relationship, but I think we should move on to the prince before we start talking about the two of them. Yeah.
So the prince, I think he was more developed because they kind of portray him in this light, you know, he's the social scandal and, you know, everything like this. But then you kind of see him in, I don't know, the way they portray him then to later, it kind of seems like it's development, but not really, a little bit. It's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a weird thing, because it feels a little bit like he's getting developed, because we're learning more about him, but he's not actually developing as a character.
I think his role...
Like, he's not...
I think his role was meant to be, like, a static character. He was supposed to change the main character for the better, but that ended up coming off as very, you know, half-arsed. Forgive my French, sorry.
So we kind of like see him throughout the movie as being this, super, super nice, good with kids, kind of, you know, six foot two, kind of, you know, we kind of, that's basically his personality after that, though. But I think the beginning, we get a little bit of something there when we're kind of like learning more about him. But after that point, he's basically the same. He's the I sent Ty also a picture of like a American like family remodel home magazine, which is like, you know, and I'm like, this is where I feel like he should be here, not on the Scandal Life magazine.
Side note, like, you know, for a second there, you think that you might have an interesting, tragic character who has his own fair share of vices, you know? Like, he's both a good person, and he has his issues. The duality of man, right?
Yeah.
So you peel back the outside layer to find the true man underneath. And you expect to find...
That sounds kind of gross, to be honest. But...
You find some kind of depth. You expect to find some kind of depth, but no. He's exactly what he appears to be on the surface. He is literally just a really, really nice dude. Super fascinating.
he's a nice guy, man. You know, he's just, I don't know, all the ladies love him. He's just a nice guy. Nothing to do with the fact that he's the king of the None at all. So, yeah, so that's... I don't know, besides that little bit at the beginning, I feel like we get no other changes from him throughout the movie. And the other thing I'll say about him, too, is that when he finds out she betrayed him, and then he goes back for her, they don't show any reason why. Like, there's absolutely no reason in the world for him to go back. Like, go back, I mean, in the sense that go back to her, like, at all. Like, do you know any? Because...
Oh, Jonathan, but he loved her. He was in love with her. Where's your sense of romance, man?
Oh, my goodness. Don't. Okay. Why don't we move on,
hold
then?
Hold on, hold on. The relationship aspect. Can we just appreciate what a trash heap of a mess that thing was? Like, so at first, you think there might be a little bit of... you know, spiciness. I think even the Amish show had a little bit more spice too. And this one, the show was about Amish people. Like, come on! How?
Yeah, I did like that movie better than this movie.
At least the relationship aspect was done a little bit better. Because, like, the relationship is shifting, it's moving, there's growth, right? As soon as the girl apologizes to him and then he acts nice to her, that sets the tone for the rest of their relationship for the next 2/3 of the movie. Just right there. Done. The two of them act really nice to each other and go around and just, except for that one part, but then they make it up to each other and then they have a wedding and then, wait, spoilers for the next film. You see what I mean? Like, I that's probably more realistic, maybe. But, like, from a storytelling perspective, I mean, it's just so droll. Like, nobody... Well, okay, to be fair, there is a place for cheesy romantic fluff, but this type of film was clearly not going... It's one thing if you're, like, dialed in for that from the start. Like, there's some stories about that where it's just all, you know, it's very nice and it's very sweet. And that's great and all, but that's if the writers are explicitly aiming for that feeling from the very beginning. They were not from here. Yeah. They were trying to have this, like, cheesy, cliche rom-com thing. And they missed it. It was just totally static from all the way through the midpoint.
Yeah.
No flags, no events. As a veteran dating sim player, I rate this relationship 1 out of 5.
All right. Moving on.
It just slipped out. It just slipped out.
Okay. So, is there any other characters? There's the,
Can we mention their cast?
There's the little...
Can we mention the cast previous roles, by the way? Just bring them up later?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, there's also there's a little sister of the prince. And she's basically the mischievous little sister. All right, we can move on to the plot now. All right. The one thing I will say about the plot... that was good. In other movies like this, usually what they do is they'd have like an entire 30 minutes of absolutely nothing going on except the main character talking about their problems and getting advice from friends and family.
Right.
And so then basically we have the same thing here. And the reason I say it's better is because instead of 30 minutes, it was 8 minutes. Yeah, that's basically it. It was basically just as bad as everything else, but they knew that it was bad, so they brisked by it really fast. I like that. The pacing was like bing, bang, boom, one thing to the other. All of a sudden, bam, they're in Lithuania or wherever.
Lithuanians the best watching part. This are going to be like, why are you confusing my country with these Romanians?
For them, these Romanians.
Yeah, that is right, where this was filmed, by the way, Romania.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up.
So, basically, the plot is very nonsensical.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
It kind of goes from one thing to another without making any sense of how or why. Like, she finds the prince's birth certificate and adoption papers in the desk. Why were they there? How did they get there? We don't know. It's just these little things that happen here and there. Like, why in the world would this prince have the slightest interest in his little sister's tutor?
Like, I could at least... By the way, just to tie this back into the... I could at least buy it if it was, like, you know, she hates his guts and he's, like, not used to that. And he's, like, intrigued by the... That's, like, super cliche. But, I mean, it works. There's a reason it works. They could have worked on that. Sorry. Continue.
The story was also extremely predictable. Like, you can already tell, like, as soon as they meet each other, you know exactly how the rest of the story is going to go. So basically, it's like the entire plot revolves around her trying not to get caught for spying on him so she can put it in her, you know, magazine, make an article in her magazine, which is her career she wants. And you can already tell the way it's going to go, man. You know she's going to get exposed. You know he's going to feel betrayed. You know they're going to get back together at the end. It is... Maybe, you know, what would have been even kind of cool is if they started out that way, but completely flipped it on its head and done something completely different at the end. At least we could say it was original. And, you know, I don't say, you know, the prequels were original, but they're still bad. So, I don't...
Subversive masterpiece!
Yeah. I mean, it's better to be subversive and bad than to be... unoriginal and bad, would you say, Ty? Right?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that.
Yeah, so at least they could have had that going for them, but besides that, I mean, besides those two plot points of you know, her with the birth certificate and the her trying not to get caught, nothing else happens in this movie. It is just completely sterile event to event. Like, do you have anything else to say about, like, besides the parts with her trying not to get caught in the adoption paper stuff? Like, can you even remember anything that happened besides that?
I have, like, vague memories of them talking to each other about, oh, you really think of me that way as a playboy? And then she's like, what? No, I don't. And then something happens. Let me double check my notes here, please. Right. From a plot perspective, first of all, terrible opening moment. We learn nothing about the main characters.
Oh.
Except for the fact that she's a journalist. We don't know why. We don't know what led her into that. We don't know. So it the only thing that it serves to tell us is that she's a journalist, pretty much. They deliver us the...
But it was short.
That is true.
They go straight to the plot. They go straight to the plot. I did like that.
That is fair. And in a film of this type, the less time you spend stewing on each scene, the better. So I will give them credit there. Oh, treats the viewers like infants. Did you notice the amount of times that they repeated exposition over and over and over? Like, multiple times. So at one point early on, they mentioned, this could be your big break, right? In reference to the Eldobia thing. Yeah. Then she goes into the office and meets with the boss. The boss tells her, this could be your big break, right? She goes back and heads out and she says to herself, this could be my big break. She heads to the castle and she says, this could be my big break. After a certain point,
did you know that I work at my cousin's farm? I'm working at my cousin's farm. Did I mention I'm working at my cousin's farm? Did you know that I'm working on my cousin's farm?
You want to see a similar type of story, viewers? Please check out our review of, what was it, An Amish Story or something.
Love Finds You
Love
in Charm.
Love Finds You in Charm, yes.
Cheesy, baby.
If you think this is great, all of you people who came here, because I know you people, you're not what I already know the audience for this. You're not our normal viewers. The vast majority of you came here because you were looking for content related to A Christmas Prince. If you want more stories like A Christmas Prince, I would strongly encourage you to check out the Love Finds You In series. By the way, did we finish that trilogy? I don't think we did.
Did we do the second
one? We did the second one, but I don't think we did the third film.
Are you sure we did the second
one?
I don't remember.
It was the one about the horses. It was the one about the horse.
Oh, right. Yes, we did do
Love
that.
Love Finds You in Sugar Creek.
I remember that now, yeah.
All right, your assignment.
Love Finds You in Sugar Creek. What a title.
Your assignment, viewers. Go watch Love Finds You in Charm. Then watch our review of the cheesiest movie of all time. Or probably just watch the review first. In fact, maybe skip the movie.
The cheesiest movie of all time. Yeah.
All right. Oh, so wait, hold on. I'm sorry. Okay, I don't know. I'm really enthusiastic about this one. I wrote down a lot. Every cliche under the sun played as lazily as possible. So I think we can agree clichés, they're tools, right? I mean, it's not like they're inherently bad. You have clichés that are used badly frequently, but that doesn't mean that they're inherently bad. You can still use them well, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is an example of how not to do that. So, so for example, the secret adoption. The prince being secretly adopted. Is there any foreshadowing for this? Do we have any reason to see this coming at all, in the slightest? Like, even a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. To move the plot forward. That's it, basically. But yeah, to answer your question, no, there isn't, besides that.
Right. And we could go down the list, but we're already starting to run out of time. So let's just speed through the rest of these. There's an unclear...
Okay, the other thing is... So one of the biggest things that... So the thing that I found the laziest and the most cliche, and that basically the whole plot rests on this one cliche, and it's so dumb, getting mistaken for another American and being allowed to stay in the castle. The entire plot hinges on that one point. And okay, there's another amazingly horrible film. I don't know if any of you viewers have seen it, but it's basically kind of like this exact movie, except for little girls, and they downgrade it for little girls, if you can even imagine this being downgraded at all.
How?
It is like the holy grail of the worst love movies ever made. It's called, well, not really love, it's a little bit, but Sophia Grace and Rosie.
We need to watch that.
We do. And in that movie, the same thing happens. These two little girls impersonate, like, cousins of the crown.
Oh, I've heard of that. To stay you sent me the trailer for that. I remember. Yep. I remember I also died as soon as I got to about a minute in. Like, I just collapsed to the ground, frothing at the mouth.
Yeah, and I can't believe they take the absolute worst. They didn't even take a good movie. They took the absolute bottom of the barrel movie they could and copied that one. That's the movie they chose to imitate. Imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Something to do with that. I don't know how to connect those. But, like, the fact that they copied that movie just makes it so funny. Oh, man, it is, yeah. It's completely ridiculous, out of whack.
All right. So, I'm just going to speed through the rest of my list so that we don't spend too much time here. So we have an unclear story objective. You have this very, very passive objective, very vague, don't get discovered for our protagonist. There's nothing to chase there. There's no forward momentum. So the story ends up grinding to a halt, and you're just watching what is essentially a vignette of cute scenes involving the prince and Amber Moore. Which, again, there is a place for that kind of story, but that's not what they seem to be going for here. So instead, it's just, it's bad. No antagonist. This also contributes to the lack of forward momentum. The antagonist doesn't come into any kind of view until very late near the end of the movie. He's a pretty terrible antagonist. I don't think we even talked about him in the character because he was just that bad. We immediately forgot about him. He is literally the most cliche.
Just forgot.
He is the most cliche villain possible. There is I don't think you can get more cliche than him, actually. He is the I'm serious. Like, you literally cannot get any worse than him. There is absolutely nothing else to his character than being the generic evil cousin. That is it. The point of view swaps are terribly done. Why do we suddenly switch these perspectives when it all seems to rotate about around Amber Moore? Why do we suddenly switch to the prince's perspective, to the queen's perspective? It doesn't make any sense. It's awkward. It comes out of nowhere. There doesn't seem to be a reason for it when we could just have Amber Moore, Sneak Master 3000, just listen in on the conversation and have it be immersive that way. That makes so much more sense, and I really don't know why they didn't do it. And here's my last note, I promise. All I have here is, romantic misunderstanding. I think that says everything that I need to know, that you need to know. Okay.
In fact, but it's not even a misunderstanding, though, because she actually did something bad.
Well, that's one way they subverted it. Subversive masterpiece. We've done it.
We've discovered the holy grail of subversion.
Everybody start clapping.
Indiana Jones out of the way, because we're the greatest explorers. I mean, we got it right here, man. Alright, so, yeah. Last thing. I'll just say this. Dude, I mean, the king putting his royal decree inside of an acorn... I've never seen, good or bad, I've never seen a plot point like that. Never. It was either genius or a 4-year-old could make it. They could say, whoa, I know. Oh, the king puts it in the acorn.
Well, I mean,
Billy, you've done it.
They do say, to be fair, they do say that you shouldn't lose, like, the mind of a child or whatever, right? Although I don't think they quite meant it in this way. I mean, you know.
Alright, to go on to the story, basically. What they're trying to do with Amber is basically shove her in your face and make you care. They don't give any reasons why. Like, at all. So there really is no underlying story of a character trying to, you know, fight past adversity or there's no internal struggle. There is absolutely nothing. Oh, actually, technically, there is the struggle with her trying to think whether to further her career or relationship with the prince. And, you know, we all know how that ends up, you know. So that's
side note, she doesn't even make a conclusive decision there. It's not even her who makes the mistake. Like, she comes close,
right.
But in the end, it's the villain who does it. So, like, that makes it even weaker.
That's true. Yeah, it is them that does that. She doesn't go out and give it to him right away or give it to the prince and say, oh, I found this when I was snooping around in your stuff. She doesn't say anything like that, but, you know. Tone narrative tropes. I want to... so there's a movie I like. It's not the best movie, but it's really enjoyable. It's called Night at the Museum 2, Battle for the Smithsonian. I've known that movie forever. I really like that movie. And there's this part where this little cowboy, he says, if I describe you in three words, it'd be... He says a few words. I don't remember what they are. And he says, and if I had to say a fourth, goofy. Just goofy. And that's basically the tone of this entire movie. Like, everything is just so goofy. From one scene to the next, it's so unrealistic. It's just goofy. That's the only word I can come up for with it, honestly.
I think a better term is, like, whack myself. It's just... It's whack.
Okay, yeah. Like,
goopy carries like a positive connotation in some cases.
Like, I don't know. Like, the way they... I don't know, like, the interactions and, like, basically all the relations, like, all the interactions that happen between Amber and the Royals is so unrealistically goofy that... And they're all goofy and, like, the story's goofy. It's... Honestly, that's all I have to say. I've said goofy too many times, but okay, your turn.
I think I'll pass this one. I mean, we need to move on relatively quickly, so.
All right, the theme, don't judge your book by its cover, is basically the only thing this movie has going for it, to be honest.
Yep.
Yeah. That's about it. Okay, I guess we're moving on. The script. Acting.
Oh, the script in this. You got to admit, there were some golden lines in this. Like, there were moments of lucidity where I was like, wow. All right. Someone says, stop acting so loosey-goosey. And Amber Moore replies bravely, there is nothing loose about this. I can't.
There is nothing loose about
this. Who wrote this? I need to meet them and shake their hand. It's amazing.
All right, go on, Ty. What's another one?
Give us I've
another
only one. Got one more.
Give us another one.
I'm sorry. I should have paid more attention. It's only three words. His Royal Hotness. What a brilliant play on words right there. You see, instead of highness, you have hotness, and it ends in ness, and it's genius.
Yeah,
it's just...
okay, Ty, yeah, we got it. I think our viewers are, yeah, okay, the script and act, okay, well, okay, yeah, that's basically... yeah, that's all I have to say for that. Okay, moving on. Music visuals. Cinematography looks like it was done by...
Trying to find a polite way to put it.
No, I'm sure... Honestly, okay, this is a little weird scenario, but I go to the orthodontist sometimes, you know, to get my retainers checked, stuff like that. And when I go, every single time, there's those TV shows... of, like, people renovating their houses and, you know, like, tearing down the walls. Right. And there's, like, 50-year-old women, like, doing all this, you know, construction. And they're like, yeah, we're going to get the house. And honestly, the cinematography looks like it came from one of those TV shows. It's that bad. Yeah, it's pretty horrendous, honestly. Yeah, and some of the shots, I'm like, wow, like, this is bad. Like, who is, like, using the camera? Did they just, like, give someone a camera and say, hey, point it at them? Yeah, you got it. Just make sure you can see their faces. That's all you need to do. Okay, do you have anything to say for that? Oh, and the music. Okay, one more thing. So they had this one song that was, it was so funny. Because it was a song at the beginning, basically the montage of the city.
Yes.
And it's basically like the knockoff version of Rocking Around a Christmas Tree. And that just screams to the whole audience, we couldn't afford Rocking Around the Christmas Tree.
I know,
So we got this from, what's that, from SoundCloud. Like,
that's too generous, man. SoundCloud is being too generous. Free royaltyfreemusic.com. That's where they went.
That's exactly where they went, yeah. Anything? I got one more thing. So at one point, Amber and the little girl who's paralyzed from the legs go sledding. And there's a scene and they try to make it look like there's a giant crash on a sledding hill. And to make it look like Amber's like, oh no, did I just break the princess? And the way that was edited and shot together has to be the most horrendous thing I have ever seen in a movie of this scale. Do you remember that scene, Ty? Oh,
I want to forget. I want to forget that scene.
It was so goofy. Oh, man. All right. Okay. I'm going to make a suggestion here, Ty. I strongly encourage you to take it. Put Goofy in the title of this podcast. Just somewhere. Like, I don't know. Just please try.
I will give it.
You're the one who usually.
I will give it my best shot. Goofy.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Can I talk a little bit more about the music?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, for those who don't know, I consider myself something of a musician. You know, I study music theory when Indeed. I eat breakfast. I watch music theory videos as I eat my food. I go to sleep listening to lectures on chord progressions. So I think I'm pretty...
You do? You seriously do all this?
Yeah. I'm a pretty big fan of that kind of stuff. So I would consider myself well qualified enough to say that this music sucks. Okay, look, there's the rare case. You know, there's the rare exception, which I really love. When you can tell that the music producer, that the composer was given at least a little bit of room to work with, and they went after it, even though the production was falling apart around them, you can tell that the entire thing was rushed, and it had a budget of maybe like $20 at most, but the composer goes all in, because they have a little bit of room there, because they work a unique role within the production. You can tell. I think I can tell to a certain extent that the composer was given this freedom. They chucked that freedom out of the window, threw it into the garbage, and burned it in that garbage, creating a dumpster fire that burned down a small orphanage next to it. Everything is washed out. Everything sounds super washed out. And what's even worse is oftentimes it conflicts... If you're going for the background, at least make it the background. Why would you heighten the sounds where people are speaking so that the music and the voice are conflicting? Why would you do that of all the choices you could make? It's...
I don't know. I'm sure you're right, but to be honest... I didn't really notice that because I just don't know a whole lot about music.
True, and at least that does show that, you know, at the bare minimum it wasn't so bad that it like knocked people out and they were like, "What is this?"
Yeah.
All right, we should probably wrap up here.
All right, final opinion and summary. I'll go first really quick. This movie was extremely bad. It was just barely, but it hit the mark where it was bad enough to enjoy it slightly. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10. Ty?
Yeah, I think I'll match that one. 3 out of 10. That seems about fair.
Yeah. All right. So together, the Narrative Calculus Podcast gives A Christmas Prince 3 out of 10. If you enjoyed this episode of Narrative Calculus, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to leave a 5-star review down below and tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Also, be sure to check out some of our other episodes, such as the Love Finds You in Charm. And we'll see you on the next one. Bye, everyone.
Bye.